Arthur Gomish, Reel 8.
When Chris Tucker was sent home, an official quiet leader, people just gathered around him like a movie star. He came to sign his book, he had written a book, and it was in a shop near the Hong Kong Club. And the crowd of people who had bought the book and wanted him to sign it were in the hundreds. They were all around the building queuing up to see him, to have it, just to say hello to him and have him sign the book. He couldn't sign up the book, but he stayed there. The people loved him. They really liked him. And when I went to Macau to go to a restaurant, and somebody said, oh, go to that restaurant. Chris Button likes to go to that restaurant.
Do you think he had an effect on people understanding the concept of democracy? Has that had an effect?
He was a good ambassador for that. Of course, he was not liked in Beijing, because he could not, he served too much.
Were you involved in any way with the handover ceremony when it occurred, when the British, you know, handed over to China?
Yes. I was among those invited for the handover ceremony and the handover banquet. There was a banquet for 4,000 people at that building which you see like a seagull coming out. And it was a very, the weather was pouring. The prince was here, and so was the Royal Yacht Britannia. A few days before that, we had a British military band playing at the Hong Kong Stadium, and I got an invitation to go there, and I went there with my daughter, and the mass British military band, the guards, the parapets, the navy, the air force, it was beautiful, the mass bands marching, the nation. And then the handover ceremony began at HMS Tamar, and there were seats built around there, and I had a good seat in there among the VIP seats. So I wasn't in the VIP group, but I was just next to it, so they were the good seats. We were all hanging up an umbrella. It was raining. It was pouring. And the performers came out and performed under the rain. And the band, the mass band, so it was beautiful, but under the rain. When the Chinese dancers came out, Hong Kong, they came out and they performed all this under the rain. And then the buses take us from where we were into for our dinner, our cocktails and dinner in this newly constructed building, which is only going to accommodate 4,000 people. And we had our dinner. It was a very good dinner, and we were given souvenirs when we left. And we went after our dinner, there were speeches short. But there were speeches at the ceremony under the rain when the prince spoke and the premier spoke. And after the dinner, the toast, we adjourned into a theater-like where there was a stage. And there, on the right hand side, was a flat mast with a looming jet fluttering. They had vents in the flat pole, and they were blowing air through it, so the flat was fluttering. I thought there were the 30 mile an hour boots. And the British band was going playing for us. On the left hand side was another band. With a Chinese body. The Chinese came in very smart, the band, beautiful dance band. They played well with the Chinese. Then the VIPs came for the ceremony, and they came in the first and the second together. And after a short speech, they went down, and the British came down. And the Chinese flag went up simultaneously. It was a moment when some were silent, some were sad, and some, of course, happy. And because when this happened, at that, the moment of handing over happened at midnight. It had to. So when they finished, it was after midnight. It was extremely well organized. We carried tanks around our shoulders, a neck chain with plastic card and the color bars, color, different color. That means our entitlement to attend the parade, previously in the rain, our entitlement to come into the banquet, have a dinner, our entitlement to go to the theater to see the end of the ceremony, and then there's another part, our entitlement to go to the swearing in of the officers. My car didn't have approval for that, so I couldn't go in there. So time was about well after one. Around 1 o'clock, well after 1 o'clock. So I wasn't very sorry that I couldn't go into that, because I had another place to go to. That was Masonic Hall, where they had a buffet table laid out with all the goodies on the table and a huge TV screen, and all the members assembled there to see who were not invited to the main ceremony. So they saw the whole main ceremony that we saw from the theatre, but they saw it on the television, on the huge television screen in Kennedy, in Masonic Hall. We saw it there. And I went there with them, and of course, wine was flowing free, food was flowing, and I had another dinner there with them. I thought I might stay overnight and sleep on the couch there, but taxis were running, so I just took a taxi and came home. And it was about 4 in the morning by the time I came home.
I wonder what your feelings were that night, Arthur.
Mixed feelings. I was very sad. I felt that part of my life was changing. And it's just uncertainty which clouded the future. But of course, I'm so happy to say that nothing happened and everything carried on as usual.
Is that right? It's just the same, is it, Hong Kong?
To the working people, to the average man in the street, it is more or less the same. If you look at employment and business conditions, the economic downturn is global, not Hong Kong.
So you're hopeful that things will continue, are you?
Even if they didn't have this hangover, we will still be facing more or less the same situation.
It's interesting you talking about going to the Masonic Hall, yes. Arthur.
Yes.
In the camp, were these societies continued? Did you have Masonic meetings in the camp?
In Stanley, they did, because the district grand master, I think of Mr. Alabaster, he was there. They had the warrant of the one of Perseverance Lodge with them, and if they had the warrant and they had the officers present, they could have a meeting. And they held two meetings, and there are minutes of those meetings in a book in the history of Cathay Lodge of Hong Kong. In the prison camp in Siam Shui Po, we did not have that facility to hold meetings because we didn't have the officers, we didn't have the warrant, and it would not be a just and proper level meeting, so we could not hold a meeting. But we assembled together and to give comfort and support to each other. I was not yet a member, but I was intended to be, and I had my own group, and which later we all became members.
Arthur, have there been long-lasting effects from your camp experience? Do you think it affected your life very much? Did you learn lessons while you were inside, apart from being able to split up logs?
I think that we all learned from what we call the University of Hard Knocks. We learned fellowship, because you see a British Tommy who would otherwise be looked down upon by high society, but yet, under those awful conditions, if he had a piece of bread, would break it in half and give half to his friend. These human values, to many, are culture and everything else is really just skin deep, structure. And they're different. So you see characters manifesting itself in camp. People that you had high regard to, you lose confidence in them. People that you never regarded at all, you admired them. It was just, you learn to appreciate and evaluate the qualities of human nature. You have Jim Wynyard, who was not a Catholic, but who gave his coat in winter to a Japanese sentry in exchange for a piece of beef to give to Father Green, because Father Green had been beaten up and needed food. These things I have mixed restores your faith in humanity.
Well, Arthur, thank you very much indeed for coming along here again today and telling me so much more about your experience. Yes, you're looking at your watch. Your wife will be wondering. But thank you very much, Arthur. We really appreciate this.
I'll be rushing on you.